for example, in the planning stages of the emancipation. On the one hand, as the emancipation was being planned, somewhat like during Catherine II's legislative commission, the discussions and the decisions of the state before 1861 were published and widely disseminated, and the country was called to participate in a discussion of what sort of emancipation should be promulgated. This was the principle of Glasnost. Provincial civic organizations, for example, above all, noble assemblies, rural gatherings of local nobles, were asked to gather together and discuss this public issue, how to implement reform, and their sessions were opened to the local public, peasants and others. Nothing like this had happened before. And the explicit goal, was, in the words of the government, to awaken public opinion, encourage citizens to be involved in public affairs. Quite dramatic. But on the other hand, simultaneously with this awakening and stimulating of public life and public opinion, Tsar Alexander ordered the police to be at every meeting and submit weekly reports on what people were saying, on their attitudes, on their mood. And when two critical voices were raised that suggest that the government should go much further than it really ever thought it wanted to, they were warned to be careful. They were silenced if necessary, and in one case, one particularly liberal noble assembly in the city in the province of Tver was entirely arrested and sent into exile. Similarly, in the content of the emancipation itself, one sees this effort to balance freedom with order, with power. First of all, according to the terms of the emancipation, freed serfs would receive land. There was great fear in the government of creating a landless proletariat. They knew from Western European experience how dangerous this could be. Indeed, these landless former peasants played a great role in the 1848 revolutions. At the same time, they wanted to keep the gentry strong. So they arranged that the landlords, the former serf owners, would keep a large part of the land and the best lands. And everything that they lost, all the land that peasants were told is now theirs, peasants were told they had to pay for. And indeed, these so-called redemption payments went on for decades after 1861. They wanted to free the peasants, but give them land to create security. They also wanted to protect the power of the most important class in the country. Finally, just to make sure that disorder didn't result from the emancipation, they made it very difficult for peasants to leave the village without the explicit permission of the commune, and communes were enjoined to not let people go unless there was a good reason to do so. We see this effort to balance a desire for radical modernizing change with a preservation of order and tradition in other reforms as well. Consider the very important Zemstvo reform of 1864. On the one hand, as I've noted, it encouraged social groups, even peasants, to be involved in local administration and rural life, education, welfare, road building, and the like. At the same time, the structure of these Zemstvos was weighted to make sure that landowners were predominant. Also, just to make sure that those who were elected, nobles and peasants, didn't dominate the show excessively, government appointees were also included among the key people running the Zemstvo. And just on top of that, if that wasn't enough, special bureaucracies were set up to keep an eye on what the Zemstvos did. Similarly, in the universities, the University Statute of 1863, the universities were made more autonomous, but student rights to organize were ended, and the faculty were forbidden to act outside of the university in any way. They could control affairs and curriculum inside, but they were forbidden from participating in public discussions or politics. Or the 1865 press reform. Preliminary censorship, I mentioned, was abolished for most books and journals. At the same time, punishment remained common against publishers who allowed their writers to speak overly critically of government policy. Now, in the long run, this attempt to balance reform with control proved to be increasingly counterproductive. To the extent that reform was limited, it frustrated liberal-minded Russians who wanted more. And in particular, what they wanted not only was the greater realization of each of these reforms with fewer restrictions, but above all, what they talked about as crowning the edifice of all the various reforms, there should be a roof on it. And what should that roof be, that crown to the edifice, but some sort of an elected assembly, a legislature.